This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. Today, we'll meet a boy who at 6 was the youngest student ever admitted to the Shanghai Conservatory. At 9, he was the youngest performer to sign with the major label EMI. And at 12, he was the youngest pianist to record all of Chopin's etudes. Want to know what he sounds like at age 16? Well, stay tuned. Here's our host, one of America's finest concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. And welcome, everybody. What a pleasure to be back in the city that does autumn like no other. Our broadcast home, Boston, Massachusetts, and to be greeted by such a big, happy, sold-out crowd here at New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall. And we're in a happy mood ourselves, considering the incredible kids we've managed to snag for today's show. Like our first young musician, a pianist who was signed by EMI to a recording contract at the tender age of 9. Yes, I said 9 years old. He's just released his 4th album on the label, where he's also recorded all the Chopin etudes. We're going to hear 2 etudes from Opus 10, number 3 in E and number 12 in C minor, the Revolutionary. This is Nunu, now 16 years old and studying at the Walnut Hill School for the Arts here in nearby Natick, Massachusetts.
Thank you.
heard the pianist Nu Nu, 16 years old from Fujian province in China, performing two Chopin etudes from Opus 10, number 3 in E major and number 12 in C minor, The Revolutionary. Nu Nu studying at the Walnut Hill School for the Arts in Natick, Massachusetts. Well, Nu Nu, it's not a surprise in the least to discover and know that you are the youngest pianist. I think when you were 12, you recorded these Chopin etudes at an age when the rest of us are still trying to figure out how to tie our shoes. The mastery is overwhelming, but I am really astonished by the focus when you play. Talk about what you do to prepare yourself for a performance.
So usually I treat the performance as a process of meditation, because 1 year ago I attended a 7-day retreat.
You've been a lifelong Buddhist,
yeah,
yes?
I'm a Buddhist, so I treat performance as a process of going through all kinds of distraction, confusion, and all kinds of mistakes. And finally, my goal, my job is to reach this unity, this successfully.
The center, and
yeah,
it's absolutely exemplary, you know, watching you play. Hope we all soak a little bit of that up. Mm-hmm. Now, Nu Nu is a nickname of yours. Tell everybody your real given name.
So I was nicknamed by my parents because I was born on the ox year in China.
So that's...
And Nu means ox in Chinese. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my parents just decided to give me this nickname even before I was born. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but your given name is what?
It's Zheng Liangzhang.
Okay.
So when I travel in Europe, those newspaper and some audience thinks my real name is too hard to pronounce. Yes, I feel like all Asian names is like pretty hard for.
Yeah, I think so.
So I didn't intend it to make people call me Nu Nu, but they just started to call it.
Nu Nu, you've been making music at a very high level since you were very, very young, but you say that what you value in performance has changed a lot over the course of years.
Yeah, so when I was very young, I treat techniques as my main goal because I haven't mastered like most of the technique at that age, so I try to practice to achieve some techniques that I always dreamed of. And then after I mastered most of the common techniques, I started to think that I need to achieve a higher level of musicality. Mm-hmm. But now I think more about how to combine both of them together and how to make them function well with each other, and to make this the final product as perfect as possible. Yeah.
I know that you've found some inspiration in popular music in terms of the enthusiasm and the excitement of that, and that's something that I know you incorporate into your performance as well. We're very excited and looking forward to enjoying more of your sound when you come back at the end of the show. You will play another piece for us again at the end?
Yeah, sure.
We'll look forward to that, and bravo again for the Chopin. Nu Nu, 16-year-old pianist from Fujian province in China, now living in Natick, Massachusetts. Composer Libby Larson has set 3 poems about cowboys to her trademark crystal clear music, and on stage to sing from this collection is a 17-year-old mezzo-soprano from San Francisco, Olivia Cosillo. Olivia, your upbringing didn't have a ton to do with cowboys, as we'll hear in a minute, but that doesn't prevent you from making this song your own. Will you introduce it and tell us about the poem?
I'll be singing Bucking Bronco by Libby Larson, which is the first of her set of 3 songs for voice and piano called Cowboy Songs. The text from all the songs is taken from cowboy and cowgirl poetry, and this particular song borrows text from Belle Starr, who was actually a famous outlaw of her time in the late 1800s.
He breaks, he promised to quit for my sake.
Olivia Cosillo, 17-year-old mezzo-soprano from San Francisco, California, performing Bucking Bronco from Cowboy Songs by Libby Larson. Beautifully sung there, Olivia, that cautionary tale. Ladies, don't let your daughters grow up to go out with cowboys. Yeah. Olivia, we asked you to tell us the story of your neighborhood, your family, and your discovery of music.
This is the street I live on in San Francisco. It's called Van Ness Avenue. If I turn to my right, the Tenderloin is there, one of the city's most crime-heavy and dangerous neighborhoods. I've seen some pretty horrible things right outside my window. It's been tough. And to the left, there's the city's cultural center, which has the opera house, the symphony, bookstores, museums, a lot of great things happening there. Standing on this street, choosing whether to turn left or right represents a choice I've had to make in my life. And I've chosen art.
Isn't it fun to sing like that? To be an experience where you get people like that sound. Why don't we sing like that all the time then? Go.
I go to Ruth Asawa San Francisco School of the Arts High School, and this is my choir. I absolutely love it here. It's where all the art freaks go and become cool and become friends. And Todd Wedge is the director of the choir that I'm in and also my private instructor, and he's been my mentor and my inspiration for the 4 years that I've been there.
We have encountered problems along the way, be it, how are we going to pay for lessons, how are we going to make sure that she's able to participate in tours or trips that we do or any financial things that kind of come up. Olivia goes online, she hunts for scholarships herself, and she really, really demonstrates a passion for the actual elbow grease, so to speak, of what it takes to be a classical singer.
My parents are also very inspirational to me. I have a very close relationship with my mom, who is my biggest fan, a very happy person, and my continuous supporter. And she remains a happy person despite the difficulties and pain she has to face every day due to the chronic immune disorder of connective tissue disease.
For the longest time, I didn't say anything to Olivia, but she, when she was even just 10, she was old enough to understand what was happening.
We didn't actually sing today.
She has had to step up without complaint. She organizes her life pretty much around it, you know. And I'm really hoping that she'll go to school away from here. I'd want her to have her college experience free of worry, because her childhood has been filled with doctor's appointments and a lot of pain, a lot of medicine, a lot of broken promises, and a lot of kids would get angry. But she is extraordinary.
My voice was raspy this morning.
I love my mom very much. I tell her everything. We've gotten so close because of her illness. I try to help as much as I can, but I do feel some guilt over what I'm doing, because singing is such an expensive habit and art form, because of the lessons, because of the travel. It really adds up. It's been very difficult for me to try to pursue what I love while feeling good about it and not feeling guilty, but my mom is so supportive of what I do that I know that she gets a lot of joy out of it as well. I love singing. To me, there's nothing that could replace it. The feeling of singing allows me to communicate my thoughts better, as cliche as that sounds. It really does transcend other forms of communication for me, and it also allows me to transform into a different character at times, which actually has helped me cope with some of the things that I have to deal with. It also gives me a great sense of focus and purpose,
and I know that it gives my parents great joy, and to delight an audience is one of the best feelings that I've ever experienced.
Olivia, it sounds like you've got overflowing measures of inspiration, responsibility, and motivation, and it's just extraordinary to hear your story, particularly life in the Tenderloin. I might recommend to you, there's actually a voluminous body of literature by William T. Volman, great writer, who wrote a lot of books taking place in the Tenderloin, The Rainbow Stories and The Royal Family, among others. Olivia, your teacher referred to the initiative you take to get scholarships on your own, and I'm happy to say we get to give you one, our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, despite the difficulties we heard about, you've also described your life back home as full of joy, like the work you do with younger kids. Please tell us about that.
Well, I teach a music class at the Breakthrough Collaborative in San Francisco. I teach music to middle schoolers, some of which who have never had musical experience before. And it's been a really rich experience for me because I get to see their learning process and I get to see how quickly they pick up such large concepts. And I've actually had parents come up to me and say, I didn't know my daughter could sing, but now I'm going to get her singing lessons. And that's just so exciting to me.
It's a very moving story. And just the work that you do and your life in music, your life in general, is a great inspiration to, I'm sure, all of us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Olivia, for being with us. Beautiful singing. Olivia Cosillo, 17-year-old mezzo-soprano from San Francisco, California.
Over the last 8 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded nearly $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
Our next performer is the winner of the junior division of this year's Sphinx competition for young African-American and Latino string players. From Newton, Massachusetts, this is 17-year-old cellist Lev Mamuya. Lev, tell everyone what we're going to play together.
We'll be playing the third movement of Debussy's Sonata for Cello and Piano. Thank you.
Lev Mamuya, 17 years old, from Newton, Massachusetts, playing the finale in the Sonata for Cello and Piano in D minor by Claude Debussy.
If you like From the Top, make sure you like us on Facebook. It's the easiest way to stay in touch with everything From the Top. You'll find daily videos, articles, photos, and a thriving community of fans. Join the fun by going to facebook.com/fromthetopfans.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from U.S. Trust, believing that the arts have a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music, online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from our home, New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Coming up, a 17-year-old from Maryland paints some evocative pictures of Provence with the saxophone. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Please welcome our next young performer from nearby Lexington, Massachusetts. This is 16-year-old violinist Yuki Beppu. Yuki, welcome. You've chosen to play a powerful piece for unaccompanied violin. Tell everyone what you're going to be playing.
I will be playing the Isai Ballade number 3.
Yuki Beppu, 16-year-old violinist from Lexington, Massachusetts, performing Izai's Ballade No. 3.
Well, Yuki, that shows what an enormous orchestral sound one can get out of one violin. It's just a magnificent piece and just so evocative, so beautiful the way you play it.
Thank you.
Yuki, you have two amazing teachers now, Julianne Lee and Donald Weilerstein here at Newman Conservatory, but you were also taught by Joseph Silverstein, the former concertmaster and assistant conductor of the Boston Symphony. Actually, I got to play under his baton a few times. Here's Mr. Silverstein reading something that has, I don't know, a little something to do with you.
Whenever Yuki arrives at the house for a lesson, I am presented with a very beautiful menu from Yuki's restaurant, in which the script is so beautiful that it's almost something which I want to hang on the wall. Here is an example of one of the menus. It starts, Yuki's restaurant, today's menu. Paganini Caprice No. 3, Paganini Caprice No. 9, the Izai Ballade, which you've just heard, Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, 2nd and 3rd.
Wow, where did you get the idea to put those menus together?
Wow, I didn't know that he had kept all of these
of
for
course,
me.
Of course, I would.
Wow, I thought of them actually the day before my very first lesson with Mr. Silverstein. And it was the night before, and I was, you know, really excited because I was going to be able to study with this amazing, wonderful violin teacher. And I was thinking of a way to present the pieces that I would play in my lesson. And then I just spontaneously came up with making it like a menu, and then I called it Yuki's Restaurant. And like, for example, like I would have an appetizer and a main course and a dessert. Mm-hmm. I brought it to the lesson the next morning, and the first thing he said was, Adrian, you have to come see. You're going to be so happy. Adrian is his wife, and that just made me so happy, and I've been writing a menu ever since for every lesson with him, so...
Gosh, that's a whole lot better than me showing up to my lesson saying, oh, my dog ate my music. You know?
Now, I understand you have a mission when it comes to your friends' iPods. What's the problem with their iPod?
Oh, well, one day at school, I was hanging out with my friends, and they brought out their iPods because they wanted to, have me listen to their music. And I looked at their iPods, and it was filled completely with pop music. And it didn't have any classical music in it at all. And I found that a little sad because they don't think classical music is cool, but I really think it is, and because it really is, I think.
Yeah.
I think classical music should be enjoyed by more people, and so one of my missions is to be able to put classical music into their iPods.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Well, there's a good tradition of classical musicians collaborating with pop stars. I think of Nigel Kennedy playing with The Who at the Royal Albert Hall, our own Lauren Shipman playing viola in The Rentals, and to do that, you want to collaborate with, wait a minute, this must be a typo. Who do you want to collaborate with?
I want to collaborate with Lady Gaga.
You actually wrote her a letter, yes?
Yeah. Well, the first time I saw her was in a magazine, and she was wearing a dress that was completely made out of beef.
Right.
And that really caught my eyesight because it
was... Well, with your menus for your lessons, I would imagine, yes.
Well, yes, that too. But, it was so unique. And, I mean, no one else would do such a thing. And I'm pretty unique myself. So I thought if I was able to collaborate with her and do something with her, then she would be able to help me make classical music, you know, known more to the world and become more popular.
Well, okay, so you wrote a letter to Lady Gaga, but I think we can help you do one better. Yuki, you know where this is going, right? Are you ready?
Yeah. Okay. Wait, but first I'm going to take off my shoes.
Okay, all right.
Because it gets me in the mood, you know?
All right, very good. And now, Lady Gaga, when you're ready. Gaga nothing. I think we're only going to remember Lady Yuki. Seriously. Extraordinary, Yuki, and all of your playing, and we wish you all the best. Just fantastic being with you on the show today.
Thanks.
Yuki Beppu, 16-year-old violinist from Lexington, Massachusetts.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. And while you're on our website, you can check out the incredible things our alumni are doing, like Neera Russell. She came on our show as a composer, and now she's a rising pop artist in L.A. who just produced a CD called Noise and Silence. Learn about her and other amazing alums at fromthetop.org. Chris.
Next, those musical pictures of Provence Joanne mentioned, and the fine 17-year-old saxophonist from Olney, Maryland, to play them. This is Chad Lilly playing Chanson pour la Mie and Le Cabredin from Tableau de Provence by Paula Maurice.
Chad Lilly, 17-year-old saxophonist from Olney, Maryland, performing from Paula Maurice's Tableau de Provence. Chad, I think it's no surprise, given the absolute opulent beauty of your sound, that you can probably relate to us that first moment that you fell in love with the sound of the saxophone.
Yeah, my dad has been in the audio video business since he was in college. So he's always had great stereo speaker systems and great music playing throughout the households ever since I was born. One day he was playing a great jazz track, which involved the saxophone, and there was a great improv solo involving the saxophone. And I looked over at him and I asked, you know, what instrument is that? And he said, well, that's a saxophone. And he showed me a picture, and I said, you know, when I grow up, I want to play saxophone. I want to play saxophone for you. So fourth grade, I took it up and been playing ever since.
Now, I think probably both of you assumed that you'd be playing jazz, but I understand that now that you've been studying for a while, you've finally managed to get your dad into classical music a little bit?
Yeah. I started studying classically in fifth grade with my private teacher, and since then I sort of split roads. Classical has become my priority, and jazz is sort of a background for me. And before I started playing saxophone, there was never any classical. There's not a hint of classical music throughout the house. But since I started playing and becoming more serious of a player, he's definitely grown and taken some big steps. He actually went to go see Yo-Yo Ma in the Boston Symphony the other day.
Yeah.
So I'm proud of him. I'm proud of him for that.
Yeah.
Big steps. He's crawling.
Yeah.
Learning to walk, so.
Excellent. Well, when you're not playing the sax, what's your favorite thing to do?
I row crew. That's my big row, and that takes up the other 75% of my 75 saxophone, 75% crew.
Yes.
It takes up my time.
I mean, that always astonishes me, the unanimity, but it's exhausting, isn't it? I mean, just doing it on your own.
Yeah, it's a lot of people don't know very much about crew. It's they know it's an Olympic sport, but really it's such a team-oriented sport. It's so physically grueling, and sometimes I question why I even do it some days. But it all pays off in the end when, in the springtime, you're racing against these other great crews, and you know that you can't let the other seven guys in your boat down. As one person gives up for a stroke or stops working, then the whole boat perils, and you can't really deal with that sort of guilt on your mind. So it pushes you a lot harder, the teamwork and the camaraderie that is involved.
Well, I think we could have done the whole show on physical fitness. Now that you mention it, I know you're a big crew guy,
yeah,
rowing. Your mom is a physical trainer and,
yeah,
and nutritionist, and I know Nunu, we didn't get to talk about this, but he lifts weights.
Yeah.
I think Lev plays frisbee. That's great. But as you say, every stroke counts, and
yeah,
every
sure.
note counted. My gosh, just such great integral and beautiful playing from you, Chad.
Thank you
very
much.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thanks. Chad Lilly, 17 years old, our saxophonist from Olney, Maryland. Let's go out with another performance by the 16-year-old pianist, Nunu. Would you introduce the piece you're going to play?
I will play La Campanella by Liszt.
Fantastic way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our great young performers and thank you all for coming and listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Nunu, please take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley and Tim Banker, with music director Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with Dan Hallis, Chris Rando, and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. From the Lemelson Foundation, supporting inventors and invention to improve lives in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. And from the estate of Joan Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.